so I'd be more than happy to lay out hour number two for you, which is exactly what I'm going to do. What's cracking? Welcome to the program. I'm Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California. Specifically, I'm live in the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you want to buy a home or refinance your current home, Rocket can. Coming up next segment, Tom Verducci, an MLB columnist for Sports Illustrated. Then coming up in hour number three, the head football coach at Maryland, Mike Locksley. In the meantime, telephone numbers are toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. Your phone call is coming up shortly. As promised, we are joined right now by an NFL on CBS analyst. He is also an NFL Network analyst. He is also a Madden analyst. And on top of that, he is a good friend of the program. He is Charles Davis. Charles, it's been a moment or two since we last spoke. How are you doing, and how is your life right now with the NFL back?
Oh, it's good to talk with you again, Jim. You're right. Last time we saw each other was Super Bowl.
That is true. That is true. So how you doing, man?
Boy, what a great time that always is. But my life is fantastic because the NFL is back. So who can be upset with that? And look, I'm not going to get into all the rest of the stuff that we're continuing to combat in this world. We're all trying to fight it the proper way. But when you look out and you see the full stadiums again and the enthusiasm and smiles on people's faces. I was in Pittsburgh this past week, and you know how much they love their Steelers. They had a doubleheader. Pitt played at home on Saturday, the Steelers on Sunday. It was pretty cool.
That is really cool, actually. Charles Davis joining us. So there's a lot of energy, and people are fired up. So you've got the Raiders and the Steelers, Charles. The Raiders, let me ask you about them. They were coming off a short week. They were traveling a long way for that game. What were you expecting to see from them, and then what do you make of the way the Raiders showed up?
Jim, we were, you know, I think our whole crew and probably all of us in the football world had the same question on our minds, and I need you to just chime in very quickly. I think we were all saying, okay, what will the Raiders look like? They have every reason to not play well in this game. Injuries in the offensive line. Big win on Monday night to open up their brand new stadium, so it's a short week. Go up there, give a little bit of effort, but if ultimately you don't win or you kind of, hey, no one expects us to anyway. Instead, they had even more injuries that occurred. More injuries during the game. Now, Pittsburgh had their share as well, so it's not like I'm just saying, hey, it was all about the Raiders. But to go on the road and play with that energy, play with that passion, foil much of what Pittsburgh was trying to do on offense with a defense that was abysmal last year. John Gruden putting the game totally in Derek Carr's hands because Josh Jacobs wasn't available to run the football. You put it all together, that's one of the most impressive wins the Raiders have had in many a year. And I've heard all the talk. You have too, Jim. Hey, okay, the Raiders start 2-0 the last 2 years. They end up finishing 7-9, 8-8. I think this team has a chance to be better than that. We're going to withhold judgment just a little bit as the season plays out, but they feel like a different team, especially on the defensive side of the ball with Gus Bradley as their new defensive coordinator.
Charles Davis joining us. I agree with you. And to answer your question, what I expected was, you know, normally, Charles, when everybody goes one way, I want to go the other way, except that I went the same way as everybody else. And specifically what I did expect, I expected that Steelers defense to dominate that Raiders line, and this is not what happened. Let me ask you about the quarterback, Derek Carr. He threw for nearly 400 yards. He had a couple of touchdowns in the win. He had more than 260 yards in the second half. He's been great in the past and also taken a lot of heat in the past. Exactly where do you think he is right now as a quarterback?
At his best. Absolutely at his peak as a quarterback in the NFL right now. I think all the questions that we've all asked over the years about, is Derek Carr John Gruden's guy? What kind of relationship do they have? You know, is there somebody else out there that they covet? I think all of that is being laid to rest by the way Derek Carr is playing. They had a slow start in the Monday night game. We remember that. They didn't play much in the preseason. And from really second quarter on, opening night, Derek Carr's been really, really good. Add in the toughness factor he doesn't get enough credit for because he got a pretty good shot on the ankle. They tape it up. He comes back out and throws a 61-yard touchdown pass to Ruggs. And Pittsburgh hadn't pressured much in that game, which is unusual for them. But on that play, they brought the fifth guy. They brought the nickel back as the fifth guy. He throws it off the back foot and arches it up there and hits Ruggs perfectly downfield. I think he's absolutely at his peak, seeing the game, understanding the game, playing the game with extreme confidence. And you can just tell, whatever we talked about before, Jim, I think we need to throw it out the window. He and John Gruden are perfectly in sync. He is John Gruden's quarterback, and John Gruden is happy to be his coach.
Charles Davis is joining us. All right, Charles, what about Ben Roethlisberger? After the game, he said, quote, "I need to be better." How has he looked to you in the first two games of the season, and where do you think that he thinks that he needs to improve?
I think that, one, he took that on for the entire team, Jim. I don't think that was just strictly him talking about himself. He's saying he needs to be better because, as an 18-year guy, he knows he needs to be the leader. And he has some youngsters on this team that he can't throw under the bus. One at left tackle in Dan Moore, one at center in Kendrick Green, one at running back in Najee Harris, one at tight end Pat Freiermuth. So he's got to get all this integrated, and they're continuing to work on that. Oh, yeah, he's got a new offensive coordinator, Matt Canada. So that's one thing. The second part, if we're being specific where he needs to be better, is he needs help. They have to run the football. And I know it's a tired trope. I get all that. People at home are like, but we throw it in the NFL. The Steelers are built to run the ball because it helps their defense be even more dominant than what they usually are. That defense hung in there with Derek Carr and crew as best they could. They ran the ball for 39 yards, Jim. I feel like I'm in bizarro world when I watch the last 3 years of Pittsburgh Steelers running the football. It just doesn't make sense, does it? This is a team that's near the end of the league or dead last in running the football. That's why they drafted Najee Harris. That's why they added the offensive lineman. They still don't have that coordination yet. The game is still on the shoulders of Big Ben way too much, and people are defending the receivers well on the run after the catch. They're not getting the big plays after they catch the football very often. And so where Ben's saying he needs to be better, I think they need to help him. They need to be able to run the ball more so that when they do run that dink and duck, you know, duck throwing, it becomes much more effective downfield.
Well, I'm with you. You're ahead of me. I was going to ask you about that, Charles. I think that that offensive line is still very much a work in progress and, to me, very much a concern. Charles Davis is joining us, so you already answered that question. Let me ask you really quickly about the defense. T.J. Watt left that game with a groin injury. If he misses any extended period of time, what does that mean for the entire Steelers defense?
It changes their rotation, Jim, because what we saw in Buffalo when T.J. Watt was healthy and had the super fresh legs coming off of the hold-in in training camp, even though he trained really hard, I do think the old adage about, you know, being in shape and football shape are always going to be two different things. And we've seen this many times where guys have come off of not playing much in the preseason or holding out or whatever and are pretty darn good in game one, and we all joke the same way, don't we? Didn't need training camp. I forgot what year it was. Lawrence Taylor held out the entire preseason, shows up on a Saturday. I think they opened on a Monday in Washington. Just a guess. I don't know if I have it exactly right. But I feel like Lawrence got like three sacks that night. And we were all, Lawrence Taylor, he doesn't need it. But he was at an age where his body didn't recover the same way. And I'm being somewhat facetious, but I may not be too far off. Jim, his next sack came like week 8. Okay, his body just didn't react the way you would have thought it would have. With T.J. Watt, it's different because he's younger, but he was spectacular in Buffalo. And now he tweaks a groin, making a cut. I just wonder how much of that is coming off of like going from 0 to 100 and being able to do that again the next week. Hopefully he'll be back soon. But how it changes things is now Melvin Ingram's a frontline guy. He had hoped to be a rotational guy, you know, this part of his career. Alex Highsmith has to really step up and become even more of a force off the edge. And now your third outside linebacker is Jameer Jones, who came out of Notre Dame 2 years ago, didn't make it in the league, goes back to Notre Dame's pro day last year. They notice him, sign him, and he makes the team on special teams. But now he's your third outside linebacker. It's a big change for them.
Charles Davis joining us, breaking it all down. All excellent points. Now, you mentioned Buffalo. How about the Bills? They bounce back from that loss to Pittsburgh in week one. They hammer Miami in Miami 35-0. Charles, when you look at the Bills and what you've seen so far, how do you think this year's version compares to last year's team?
I think this year's version may not have this exact same record as last year's version, but I think by the end of the year, barring the catastrophic injuries we all, you know, just put out there, they'll be a better football team. And here's why. Week one, I felt like they approached the game like it was just going to be a continuation of 2020. We'll do the exact same things in terms of, hey, they can't cover us. We can put five out there, put it all in Josh's hands, et cetera, et cetera. And they had a few bumps along the way. Brian Daboll is a very smart offensive coordinator. He caught a lot of grief about, you know, game one and that fourth down call and all that. People need to put that aside. Brian Daboll is too smart not to adjust, and we saw some of that in this game against Miami. They'll be fine. The big deal's on the defensive side. They drafted Greg Rousseau out of Miami because they needed a pass rusher. Did you see him yesterday? Two sacks, those long arms, plays with that length. That's what they need. I think they'll be better on that side of the ball, and that's why ultimately they'll be a better team, and they'll be even more battle-tested because the schedule's going to be tougher for them this year too. I like Buffalo a lot. I thought that week one, yeah, they got beat by a pretty darn good Steelers team. They're always going to be the Steelers. But overall, maybe a little bit of a wake-up call for Buffalo. I think they'll be fine.
Spending a few more moments with Charles Davis. Charles, I know you're focused on the game that you were calling, but I want your thoughts on Zach Wilson, if you don't mind, because he had that really rough day for the Jets. He had the four interceptions. He heard the boos. I know you studied him closely ahead of the NFL draft. What would you say to Jets fans who are worried two starts into his NFL career?
Yeah, it's understandable why you're worried, because we're in that time frame where everything is a reaction right here, right now, and that, you know, we're now blueprinting that's who you are. We keep forgetting that people grow. We keep forgetting that people learn. Here's the thing. I'm not going to pull the Aaron Rodgers relax thing, but Zach, and this is something I wrote down at the end of my scouting this year, or I getting ready for the draft, and I wrote it in big letters in my book, and it's very simply this. Let's not get too crazy when we watch these pro days with the off-platform throws that wow everyone. Let's make sure that they can drop back 3, 5, 7 steps, hit that back foot, and hit the receiver in the proper spot. Not that Zach Wilson can't do that. He can. But the wow plays are why we get so excited about him. Drew Locke and his off-platform performance in his pro day, that's what got people excited. That's why in Denver we thought he was going to be that guy. I could go on and on, Jim. Bottom line is, can you do the fundamentals? As Mike Tomlin likes to say, we want to do the fundamental things fundamentally well every play, right? Okay, got it. Bottom line is, that's what you need to see with Zach Wilson. Right now I think he's trying to make all those BYU off-platform throws, spectacular plays. He's got to take the routine, do those every single time. And I think that's what Robert Saleh and the Jets staff would be coaching him on. Hey, hit the routine plays. Let the spectacular happen when they're supposed to. Every play, you can't turn it into one of those. That's what the Jets fans have to focus on. And I think this young man will make that shift.
Charles Davis, my guest. Really quickly, Charles, earlier this year, you were on the call of the Black College Football Hall of Fame Classic over Labor Day weekend. Now, back in the day, your father played at Bluefield State in HBCU. So what did it mean to you to be on the call for the Classic this year?
It meant everything for me, absolutely. And then the reason, one of the big reasons why I'm excited to do it every year is to honor my father and to honor all the people who played at the HBCUs. Bluefield State, as you mentioned, where my dad played, the Big Blues, they dropped football. They just brought it back this year for the first time, Jim, and Bluefield State integrated in the 1970s. So they're going to have football for the first time since then. That gives my dad a sense of pride. Roger Brown, one of the great players at Maryland Eastern Shore, actually was Maryland State back in his day. My dad played against Roger Brown. He just passed away the other day. You know, these are the type of things that are meaningful, and I was raised in it. My birthday gift every year were tickets to the Whitney M. Young Classic in New York. I got to see Grambling and Alcorn State and Bethune-Cookman and teams like that come through. It means everything to me, especially in tribute to my dad.
Really cool stuff. He is an NFL and CBS analyst. He is an NFL Network analyst. He is a Madden analyst. He is a good friend of the program. He is Charles Davis. Charles, I appreciate it. Hope you and I can see each other again really soon, and it's always great to have you on the show.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Yeah, I would certainly love to see you again long before the next Super Bowl.
You got it, my man. Take care, be good, and we'll do it again soon. Charles Davis, NFL analyst for CBS Sports. All right, quick timeout when we come back. Tom Verducci joins me. We talk some baseball. I'm looking forward to that. Always great to have him on, too. Phone lines are open. Take advantage of it. We'll get you in here. So, clones, one thing. You know I'm always looking out for you, right? You know this. Why don't we talk about the most creative sports betting app on the market right now? WynnBET. That's right, WynnBET. The luxury hoteliers are now in the digital sports betting space, and they are offering the same five-star service that you are used to from Wynn Resorts. It is such an amazing brand, and they're offering it all in the form of a sports book and casino app. Whether you're playing money lines and props for NFL Week 3, or totals and live betting for college football Week 4, WynnBET has got you covered completely. All the biggest events are right here at WynnBET, and they have even added a search bar to help you navigate that app. It gets better. WynnBET is now fully integrated with Wynn Rewards, the finest loyalty program in the industry. See their site for all the details. Whether playing from your phone or your computer, you've absolutely got to sign up for WynnBET ASAP. Bet with the best. Get into the game. Offer subject to change. Terms and conditions at WynnBET.com. You've got to be 21 or older and present in the state where playthrough WynnBET is available. If you or somebody you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
O'Reilly Auto Parts is here to keep your car on the road with the right parts and advice from their professional parts people. So when it is time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. The professional parts people will help you navigate their wide selection to find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will even help install your wiper blades free of charge. If it's tools you need, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. Ask about their free loaner tool program. There is no need to purchase a tool if you're only going to use it once, right? Just pay a refundable deposit at the time of rental. Your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store has more than 80 specialty tools available to rent for your next repair. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. They're close. They're convenient. They are known for guaranteed everyday low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people that you know you can trust. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit O'ReillyAuto.com. I am efforting Tom Verducci, and he's got a great piece up right now on Shohei Ohtani, which I want to get into. Quickly, some reaction. Touch base with you clones. On social media, at East Bay Troy, quote, Seagal will never fall off our radar. Signed, Golden Corral. Yeah, but he kind of fell off your radar. You clones were on Big Steve for a long, long time. It's almost like you forgot. At Squirrel 2, quote, KC was marked for death the second they rolled into Baltimore. Yours? Feeding Seagal.
Karate.
Let's be transparent here. Let me own this. There was a point in time in my life where I thought this guy was like the biggest thing in the world, and I was right. Now, I mean, aside from that, though, I actually did like those movies. I've told you this story way, way, way back in the day when I got my first break in television. The studio where we shot Talk 2 for ESPN2 was on the corner of Hollywood and Vine. I mean, a great spot to be. So there was this bar, and there were restaurants right around there that we would hit up afterwards. And especially, like, if a guest, it's kind of a weird thing, like, if a guest came in from out of town, sometimes we'd go hang out after the show. More on that in a minute. But as I promised you, I'm joined right now by somebody who represents, among others, MLB Network, Fox Sports, Sports Illustrated. He is a winner of 3 straight National Sports Writer of the Year awards. First person ever to win an Emmy Award as both a studio analyst and a reporter. A New York Times bestselling author. A member of the National Sports Media Association Hall of Fame, Class of 2020. Highly pedigreed. He is Tom Verducci. Tom, it's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. How are you?
Great. It's good to have you, Tom. Thanks for making time. Always look forward to it. You've got a great piece in Sports Illustrated on Shohei Ohtani up right now. I want to ask you, when you first started to think about the piece and observing him throughout the season, what were the types of questions you had personally that you were looking to answer?
The biggest thing for me, Jim, was how is this even possible? How is he doing it from a logistical point of view, planning point of view, physical point of view? I mean, it's crazy that anybody even tries to do what he's doing, being a true two-way player. But to be able to do it at his level and now doing it 6 months into a full season, that's what I wanted to get at, because I know we use Babe Ruth as a comp, and Ruth actually only did it as a full-time two-way player for like three and a half months in the 18 and 19 seasons. So that's what I wanted to get at, and the bonus for me was figuring out that this guy is doing it for one reason only. He just loves baseball. This is what he loves to do. And so for all the people who say, man, I wonder what he'd be like if he just specialized as a pitcher, or man, what if he just hit? How good would he be? I think we're seeing the best of Ohtani because he is doing both.
Yeah, I was going to say that. In fact, you answered that question. I was going to say that there's always that focus, Tom, on like, well, yeah, if the guy just did one thing, imagine how great he'd be. But the fact of the matter is he's doing both because he loves the game so much. I thought that A.J. Hinch had a great, great quote when he told you, quote, to see it in person is something I'll always remember, end of quote. He then praised his pitching and his power and said, quote, I'm mostly amazed at the ease that he plays with. He doesn't try too hard or give the impression that he's stressed physically or mentally, end of quote. I mean, it's like, not only is he doing the impossible, Tom, he's making it look easy. How is it possible that somebody of his size can make something so hard look so simple?
Well, you start with desire, right? As I said, this is his passion. So all this is coming from the heart. Remember, he jumped to the big leagues a year ahead of when he could have been a totally unrestricted international free agent, like put him on the market with no cap on what he could earn. So he gave up literally a couple hundred mil to come to the major leagues a year earlier than he did. Start with that. Now look at him physically, right? The comp I use is not a baseball player. It's Michael Phelps. You know, he's long, he's lean, he's got the broad shoulders, thin waist, the long levers, which is great for both pitching and hitting. But he's also like freakishly flexible. I mean, there's pictures of him where he can do things with his shoulder joints and elbows that, I mean, it hurts looking at it. But the way his body moves through space is just so fluid because he is so flexible and he is long and lean. So he's perfectly conditioned. He's got the right attitude. And besides that, he's a baseball junkie. This guy, he lives and breathes baseball. You know, you sometimes wonder, like, what else does he do? Because he's totally invested into the game of baseball.
Is there an answer like, what else does he do? Anything?
Like a lot of people his age, he plays video games.
Right.
And that's pretty much it, really. I mean, when you talk to the Angels staff and those people there, you know, you'll see in the course of the game, he's on those tablets a lot, trying to learn more about the other team's pitcher. Let me get something straight here. He does have fun doing it. It's not like he's just totally locked in as a baseball nerd and that's everything. You know, he's a joy to be around. And I think when you think about how he's able to do it physically, Jim, I go back to something the pitching coach Matt Wise told me, that he throws the ball pretty. You know, he told his 13-year-old son, listen, if you can emulate a way to throw a baseball, watch Ohtani do what he does. So he's a template for a lot of things, but for me, it's kind of an old school template where he's playing the little league version of baseball where you get to do everything. And you do it with a smile on your face.
Incredible. Tom Verducci is joining us. So, as you write, in terms of power and stolen bases, he's having a season that is in the league of guys like Willie Mays, Mike Schmidt, Jose Canseco, Alex Rodriguez. And then at the same time, he's on pace to become the ninth pitcher in history to strike out at least 10 batters per nine innings with a winning percentage of at least 8-10 over 20 starts or more. I mean, there's so many different ways to measure his greatness. Do you have a particular stat or anecdote that we haven't discussed that's your favorite?
Well, I think in a sense, I would say this guy throws the hardest pitch to hit in baseball. That's a split-fingered fastball, right? Batters are hitting 0-67 against that one pitch. Yesterday, the A's went 0-19. So it is the singular most difficult pitch to hit in baseball. That alone makes him an elite pitcher. But yet the same guy who throws the most difficult pitch to hit in baseball has 44 home runs, 23 stolen bases, and oh, by the way, managers have intentionally walked him more than anybody else in baseball. Now, there's only two other hitters you could say that about in the course of baseball history, and that's Bonds and Griffey. So, I mean, the company that he's putting himself in, I know we use Babe Ruth as the comp in terms of, you know, doing both it in one season. But you really have to break it down individually and compare him pitcher to pitcher and hitter to hitter, and he compares with some of the best in the game's history. And it's a shame that, you know, he's not surrounded by a healthy Mike Trout and a healthy Anthony Rendon, where pitchers do have to pitch to him. Because, you know, he's second in baseball and seeing the fewest fastballs in the strike zone. So he could be even better, I believe, if he was surrounded by a healthy Angels lineup.
Right, Tom? So to that point, like, the team has not reached the postseason since 2014. The streak is unlikely to end this year. How important is it for the sport overall for the Angels to reach the postseason at some point with Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani?
Well, let's start with the Angels, right? I mean, there's no rebuilding if you're Artie Moreno. You've got Trout on his contract. Mike turned 30 this year. He's had trouble staying healthy the last couple of years. I don't want to say his window's closing. I mean, he's too good of a player. But you start to hear the clock on the prime of Mike Trout, at least. And the contract at Rendon, making him the most expensive third baseman in baseball history. You're all in if you're Artie Moreno. So you have to keep throwing money at this team. And now you've got Ohtani, and you can't waste this generational talent. Actually, he's once-in-a-century kind of talent. So you have to get in it, whether it's for a Max Scherzer. They tried briefly for Cole last year. You have to go get pitching to support those guys. And as far as Major League Baseball goes, I truly believe that the stars of baseball don't become crossover, you know, multi-generational, multi-sport, you know, attractions unless you get to the postseason and really probably the World Series as well, right? Derek Jeter goes in the Hall of Fame. That's because, you know, he's good, A, but B, he grew up on our television screen every fall, you know, playing in the World Series. Ohtani and Trout, we don't see them in the postseason. And to be a true major league star, and I think Ohtani represents really everything that's great about baseball. I think he is a fantastic role model for the game. Obviously, he's important to baseball's finances because he's an international star. But you need to see him play in the postseason before he truly can be the face of baseball, which I think he can. But baseball is a little bit different, where team success really matters if you're going to be a true superstar.
Absolutely. He needs that help. So final thought, Tom, in terms of individual talent and upside, you mentioned that he's a once-in-a-generational player, a once-in-a-century kind of player. If he is able to stay healthy, what is his ceiling, or maybe is there no ceiling?
Yeah, I wouldn't put much past him. I think in terms of pitching, you're probably looking at the ceiling, because I don't think you can pitch him every fifth day. So he's not going to rack up 200 innings, 300 strikeouts. That's just asking too much. He was conditioned to throw, you know, once a week. That's what he will do. But offensively, I do think there's more in the tank. And again, it all gets back to me with supporting him, so that, you know, if you're Bob Melvin in the other dugout, whoever the manager is, you're saying, there's no way I'm letting this guy beat me. We're just going to pitch around him in any kind of a situation that's even somewhat meaningful. Take that away, give him more passes and pitches in the strike zone, and I think you're looking at a guy who can hit 50-plus home runs or even more than that. I think the batting average will be higher, and obviously with guys on bases, RBIs are going to go up. So I think his offensive upside is he has not scratched the surface yet. There is more in the tank there for Ohtani. But pitching-wise, not that this is anything bad, because he punches out 10.5 batters per 9 innings, but I think you're seeing him at his top in terms of what he can do on the mound.
I'm not going to ask you more of what I'm already getting from the guy, Tom, but hey, you know he's a great base runner, too. Can you imagine this guy going like 40-40 on top of all this? Not that I would make that a priority, but...
I would not put that past him. I think sometimes they pull the reins in on Shohei, but yeah, I mean, he's got the fastest time from home to first base. He can almost take a bag when he wants. So that would definitely be in the wheelhouse when you're talking 40-40.
That's an amazing stat also. We didn't even get into that he's got the fastest time or second fastest time from home to first base as well at that size. I mean, we could go on and on and on. It's a really good piece. You should read it. It's in Sports Illustrated. It's on Shohei Ohtani. Of course, Tom Verducci wrote it. MLB Network, Fox Sports, Sports Illustrated. Tom, great to have you back. Always appreciate you and the relationship. Great to have you on the show.
Yeah, always great, Jim. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Great talking to you. Much respect. 1-800-636-8686. Back-to-back analysts that are two of the very best. As an example, first of all, Tom Verducci is as good as anybody at what he does. He is so good. So good. Charles Davis as well. Matt Mikla tweets, dude, Charles Davis knows his bleep. Detailed breakdown on any team you throw at him. Respect. No doubt. And one of the best guys. Charles Davis, super, super dude. Look, we don't put analysts on the show that don't know what they're talking about, right? But appreciate the feedback. So let's set you up now. 1-800-636-8686. I've got those two interviews back to back, so we have an open segment coming up next. Top of hour number three belongs to Maryland head football coach Mike Locksley. I still want to talk TB44. Man, this dude looks good, really good. And a big part of that is he's got weapons everywhere across the field. Taunting. It's bad, man. I don't like this rule at all. It's getting worse, not better. And it really is damaging the game, if you ask me. It's affecting the game. This is not like we're talking about affecting the head. I understand why you want to take headshots out of the game. I understand why you want to make the game safer. Taunting is not affecting the game, or at least it wasn't until you tried to take it out of the game. All of that is still ahead. Before I get to any of that, though, I do have a sports update for you. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
As you may have gathered, not all beef jerky is the same. Old Trapper's original old-fashioned teriyaki, hot and spicy and peppered. All come in 4-ounce bags so you can sample different flavors to find the best one for you. Ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef? All right, so we're open right now. You should call right now. 1-800-636-8686. Bass Ackwards is in. Quote, what's all this about a pick six? Regards, Columbia House CDs. You got to be pretty old to remember that. Do they still do that? Do you remember that thing? In fact, I don't even remember. I think it goes back further than CDs. They may have done 8-track tapes back in the day. That was one of those deals. Cassettes, 8-track tapes, definitely cassettes. That was one of those deals where Columbia House would hit you up with, you can have 15 records for one penny. Little, and I don't want to slander myself or get in trouble legally. I'm just going to throw this out hypothetically. But in order to get those 15 records for one penny, weren't you on the hook to buy like 5 million other records at regular cost for the rest of your life? Like, you want to talk about not being able to get out of a gym membership.
For life.
That Columbia House deal, man, you could never get out of that thing. I mean, nobody, does anybody really buy that kind of thing? Like, if something seems too good to be true, it is. You don't get 15 records back in the day for a penny. Oh, okay. Oh, that sounds amazing. 15 records for a penny. I think I'll do that. Hey, whatever you do, don't read the small print. Don't read that you have to buy 15,000 others at the regular price in the next 15 days. And by the way, that whole thing about, and if you don't like it, send them back. Yeah, because that's not a pain in the ass. Who wants to go to the post office and send back 15 records that you don't like? Man, back in the day, what a scam that was. 8-track tapes. Are any of you old enough? Hey, kids, look that one up. 8-track tapes. I can remember riding around with this kid, and we were coming home from school one day, and he had like he was bumping some Billy Joel, and there's one of the good songs. Only the Good Die Young comes on. He's like, no, save it. Like, if you play it, you lose it. Not like you can find it. Or driving around like, you want technology. How about an 8-track tape, like, where the song runs out before the end of that track, and you got to bump it over to the next one? Great technology. 8-track tapes. That was clean. That sounded clean. Anyway, you're taking me back to a kinder, gentler time where you can smash 8-track tapes into your deck.
Smash!
Wells, quote, I like how they're Ritz Panthers. Since Ritt is darn old, like their quarterback. Wow, Wells. You proud of yourself? You shouldn't be. Darn old, like their quarterback, Sam Darnold. Well, that's clever, Wells. Really good stuff, Wells. Stay on it, Wells. Really good stuff. All right, I want to start this thought, and I'm not sure I can finish this thought because I've got a lot of thoughts on this thought. With everything that went on yesterday, I mean, there's so many other things I'd rather talk about. As an example, I would really like to talk about Trey Turner getting ejected in Pittsburgh and whether or not there was a projectile flying in somebody's face before the ejection. Because as we've talked about numerous times, if you spit in somebody's face, that's a reason to go. Or I could even go off the grid and take it to another sport. Talking about a reason to go. How about NASCAR? What led Kevin Harvick to be dropping a chicken bleep, a freaking, and a I'm ready to rip somebody's freaking head off in a post-race interview?
That was kind of a chicken shit move that he did there at the end. You know, we're racing for the freaking win at Bristol. We're three wide in the middle, and he throws a temper tantrum I was just trying to get the lead and racing hard. And then he pulls up in front of me and just sits there until I lose the whole lead. So they can boo all they want. I don't care. God, I'm ready to rip somebody's freaking head off.
All right, so that's good stuff right there, right? That's what I want to be talking about. I'd even talk about that weird tweet that Jacksonville posted last night. Lots to talk about, but once again, I got to talk about the refs. I got to talk taunting. I have to talk about the idiotic flags that were being thrown left and right. And I've been warning everybody for a long time now that the new focus on taunting was a terrible idea. The second that came up, I knew that was a terrible idea. And I hate to say that I told you so, but I really did tell you so. Because it is ruining games. Ruining games. Check this quote, unquote, taunting from the Houston-Cleveland game. This was considered taunting.
To the outside. That is complete for a first down. Being rolled down at the 40-yard line is the tight end, Jordan Akins.
After the play, unsportsmanlike conduct. Number 88, spinning the ball in the opponent's bench. That's number 88, first taunt toward disqualification.
Literally one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. And no hyperbole in that. Literally one of the stupidest things I've ever seen. Imagine getting on a microphone in front of 67,000 people in the building and millions watching at home and having to explain that you're penalizing somebody for spinning the ball in front of the opponent's bench. I mean, how stupid is that? A flag for one of my favorite things ever. I've always thought that was one of the coolest moves ever. A dude dropping a spinning rock on an opponent after making a big play. I love when receivers do that. I love when Steve Smith used to do that. I love that move. And you want to take one of the best things out of the game. Man, for who? For what? That is so dumb. Almost as dumb as this flag in the fourth quarter of the Tennessee-Seattle game on Seahawks DB DJ Reed.
Tannehill loading up, taking a deep shot. He's got a man down there, and it's incomplete. A.J. Brown, the intended target, and DJ Reed had the recovery. And now a flag comes in. That is a late flag.
Well, it's a taunting call. Now, if the receiver had caught it, got up and spun the ball, no taunting there.
After the play was over, taunting.
I mean, I'm telling you, that was a justifiable fired-up reaction from Reed after a big play in the fourth quarter. A big play in the fourth quarter, and they hit him with a 15-yard penalty. And then how about this explanation?
First down. That's number two's first foul in the category of unsportsmanlike play conduct. He gets another foul in the same category, he will be disqualified.
I mean, and there were so many more. Like, if you're not watching on CBS Sports Network, all he did was get up and was literally just fired up and gestured and kind of had a fist pump. I mean, there were so many more. There are entire montages of this. And honestly, as much as I love this league, it makes the league look terrible. It's just so dumb and it's so idiotic. You know, how about Chicago's Deshaun Gibson clapping in the face of Ja'Marr Chase following a drop pass on third down? That's 15 yards, apparently. 4 minutes later, Cincinnati's Von Bell was hit with 15 for taunting Andy Dalton after an incompletion. Now, you could argue that taunting Andy Dalton is like kicking a child, but still, it should not be a flag. As Gibson were to say later on,
I wasn't really saying much. I just clapped, man. It was a huge play on third down, pumping up my guys. And that's just the type of thing. It's the energy that you're playing with these guys. I don't want to be out there if I can't be happy for my guys, man, when they make big plays. That's what this game is about, man. So it's just adrenaline.
That's it. He's just happy for his guys, pumping his guys up. It's just adrenaline. He acknowledged that if this is how the game is going to be called, he can't do that. But I'm going to say right now that if this is how that game is going to be called, they're going to ruin the game. Nobody is looking for the Zebras to inject themselves into the game like this. It does not make the game better. It makes the game worse. So much worse. This is not like cracking down on headshots. There is no safety component to this. I know the league had to get tough on headshots because it was threatening the health of the players. I know some of the players were pissed about that, but my message at the time was, and is, this is how the game is changing. You have to adapt. It's the right thing. But that's not what this is. Not even close. Like, this is solving a problem that nobody wanted solved. This was a solution in search of a problem that did not exist. Worse, it was a solution that went to create a problem that has created an even bigger problem where no problem existed, right? There's not a fan alive who is saying to themselves, man, I'll tell you what, there is way too much taunting going on in this game. In fact, I can't even watch it anymore. This is all about some people in the league who got their feelings hurt when Tyreek Hill was backflipping. So they wanted to end it. Remember, this was John Mara of the Giants talking last month.
Kind of sick and tired of the taunting that does go on from time to time on the field. We've tried to balance the sportsmanship with allowing the players to have fun, and there's always a fine line there. But none of us like to see that, and it's just a question of whether you can have rules that can be enforced and without taking the fun out of the game, too. But nobody wants to see a player taunting another player. I know.
Right there, there's the money quote right there. Quote: nobody wants to see a player taunting another player. How wrong you are, my man. Talk about not knowing your audience. Nobody wants to see a player taunting another player. Everybody wants to see a player taunting another player. What a terrible rule. What a terrible take. I've got more. Like I said, I couldn't get to all of that right there. I've got more on it, and I'll hit that next hour. Also, we start next hour by talking to Maryland head football coach Mike Locksley. Stay tuned.